That's actually the second time I've seen the film, and I always tear up at that bit with Clarence, and I think it really shows to what degree it can make a difference when people feel empowered and can make some decisions for themselves. So now it's my great honour to invite two people up. The first one is Sally Brennan. Sally is an Adult Learning Australia board member. She's also the ASVIC executive officer, and she's worked in the community and adult education section for a long time. I'd also like to invite our guest, Jack Beetson, from Literacy for the Life Foundation, who you would have heard of in the film. Jack and Sally, if you would like to take a seat, and I'll hand it over to Sally now, who's just going to be the moderator for a short Q&A session. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Where do you go after that? I think I've got the best gig in the house because I get to sit up here with this legend. I'd like to pay my respects to the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, and my respects to their elders past and present, and to every Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person in the room. Jack. So, Q&A. We have a Q&A. Here's your chance, everyone. We've got 15 minutes, and here's your chance to ask this man, this incredibly learned man and insightful community leader, why this program works in the way that it does. What is so unique and great about it? Why does something that happened in Cuba that worked so well in Cuba translate and speak to our Indigenous community here? There you go. That's my first question.
I just want to acknowledge the traditional owners here, and I want to acknowledge my own traditional owners. It's on the shoulders of my ancestors that I land here today, and that's the Nyimba people of Brewarrina, many of which you've just seen. A lot of language groups out there in that town, probably 15 or 18 language groups, and that in itself lends to a pretty big challenge to be able to bring something together. But what makes this work is really simple. There's no rocket science behind it. It's that it's Aboriginal people doing it themselves. And that was the whole idea of this campaign model. In Cuba in 1961, and in Australia in 2012 to 2017. It was about working with local communities for them to take responsibility for their own learning. All we was a toolbox. Charla, of course, who came out, he came out to maintain quality control of the method, which is this method in its original form. This is the first time it's happened in a developed country. And in 2012, we graduated 19 people in Wilcannia, and I was asked to go to Cuba to report on our success. And just prior to me getting up to report on our success, the Venezuelans got up to report on their success. And they got up and they said, "We'd like to announce that we've just graduated our 2 millionth student." I got up 5 minutes later and said, "We've just graduated our 19th student in Wilcannia." The extraordinary thing about that they were the first adults to graduate from any literacy program in 20 years in Wilcannia using this model. So really, you know, you could claim all sorts of things, but it's really about working with the community for the community to take ownership of it and deliver itself.
Mm. And that was very starkly evident when you saw Kurt in the back seat of the car with the two women beside him, and he wasn't going anywhere. You know, so who has a question? Who has a question for Jack or a comment? Yeah, sure. Oh, sorry, I should have said that. There are mics on either side.
I better use the mic. Jack knows I've got a croaky voice. Can I start by acknowledging country, traditional owners? Can I just also do a couple of things. I want to acknowledge Jack and your years and years of leadership. I want to thank you for doing that for our people. I want to acknowledge the Cuban peoples, the government, for this amazing program. 6 million people across the world. The question I'd like to ask is, do you have the capacity to scale this up? Do you have the capacity as an organisation to do this across the country?
Yeah, I believe we do. It's a matter of resourcing, which is probably the biggest challenge. If we had the resources, you can. It's also a matter of, developing your human resources around staff training and so on to do it. But it can happen. There's no doubt about that. The only thing that gets in the road of this is resourcing it to happen. And ironically, while this is the first country to do this Yossi Puedo or Yes I Can in its original state in a first world country, we're also the first country in the world not to run a national campaign, a national literacy campaign. And that's therein lies the problem. I'd have to live to be 1,000 if I was still going to be hanging around at this rate to see this problem solved. And it shouldn't be that big a task. In East Timor, 250,000 people became literate in 3 years using this very same model, you know. So that if there was 50% of the adults, Aboriginal adults in Australia, had low literacy, we'd only be looking at 200,000 anyway, you know, from people 15 and up. So it shouldn't take any longer than that. And I say that in knowing full well that we're a huge country compared to Timor. Timor's only got 1 million people and it's very small. We're a huge country and we're scattered over a vast area of land. And that in itself will present challenges. But it certainly shouldn't be something we're looking at 50 to 60 years to achieve. This should be something that we should be looking at addressing within the next 10 years.
Anyone else?
Yes.
I'm just wondering, is it a close the gap target?
No, it's not at the moment. It, of course it should be. It absolutely should be because regardless, none of the people that have that are critically illiterate, which many of them are, if you look at Clary, he was assessed as critically illiterate. He couldn't even see the gap, you know, let alone close it. And the first step in closing any gap, the first step in having any successful government programs or government initiatives that are going to bring about some sort of equity or quality of life for Aboriginal people has to begin with literacy. Yeah? And I was talking to a group of people this morning and I said, the best inheritance we could leave Aboriginal children is literate parents. There is no better gift we can leave our children than that. And the reality is, if you don't have literate mothers, you won't get literate children. Dragging kids to school and shutting them down for 6 hours a day doesn't produce literacy at the end of the day. It's literate mothers.
Thank you. And would you mind just introducing yourself as well? Thank you.
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. I'm Daniel Gaspari. I'm Charge of Affairs from the Embassy of Venezuela. And very proud to be here. I acknowledge the Cuban Revolution for this program they have developed. And I just want to do a comment. In my country, almost 2,000 people in 2003 were illiterate. And with this program, we finally, in 2006, find out to be free of illiteracy thanks to the government of Cuba and the solidarity of these wonderful people that developed this program. Actually, there were 2 million people in my country who now can read and can read and actually write, but I need to acknowledge that 70,000 people of these 2 million were indigenous people, and they learn how to read and write in their own language, which is also something wonderful. So I appreciate a lot the opportunity to be here. I thank the government of Cuba. Thank you for inviting us, and please continue going forward. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments from the floor? Yes, up in that.
I don't know that I'd want to align too much to parliamentary processes. that's just me. But this has to be community-focused and it has to be community-owned. And part of the... with this, we don't go in unless the community invites us first. And it's not always a pleasant space you're going into, but nonetheless, we go when we're asked. But the first question we ask when we get in there is... what are you going to do to support the campaign? And the community begins to take ownership right at the very beginning. We set up a body that manages us. If something goes wrong in the class, which it invariably does, they're the ones that tell us how to deal with it. So it has to belong in the community. There's a few other things. Because this doesn't fit within the Australian qualifications framework of certificates 1 to 4, there's a policy vacuum. So the education department finds it very difficult to be able to identify funding for something that doesn't fit there. Also, if we become a registered provider as such, then all of a sudden the teachers have to be qualified. They'll have to have workplace forums or, you know, certificate form, workplace training, whatever it is that they've got to have, then that will all interfere with this because... these people that are facilitators and teachers are at about year 10 level. And so it's really important that when we go into the community, in Brewarrina, and I can talk about this, that's my mob, is that there's 5 communities. There's 5 Aboriginal communities. And when I first went there, they said, and the ambassador was actually with me that day, and I locked horns with a couple of the leaders there. As you do, when you're in your own country, you can lock horns with others. And they said, well, we won't be working with that mob, and if you think them mob are going to be in the class with my mob, well, you're wrong. They won't be coming in there. We locked horns, had a bit of an argument to and fro, and I said, well, if you actually want us to come, you have to figure out a way that you can get 2 people from each of those 5 communities to sit on a management committee together to take ownership of the campaign. And I said, we won't be doing that. And I said, that's good. I'm not pressuring you to do it. It's up to you. That's your decision. 2 weeks later, they rang up and they said, we've got them 10 people you wanted. And I said, no, it's about you wanting them, not me. You know? So anyway, sometimes I think when you go to your own community, it's even more difficult because people seem to have a real go at you then. But I never forget when I walked out and I said to the ambassador, I said, I'm really sorry about that, Ambassador. I said, but sometimes we have meetings here, we've got to soften each other up first before we get out in the business. And he said, don't worry, Jack, that happens in Cuba too. I do want to, while we're talking about this, so my answer really is it has to be community-owned. It can't, if it leaves the community, then, or that ownership part of it, it won't work. And it doesn't work because of me. I'm the laziest black fella in Australia, to be honest with you. I just go and raise money for other people to do all the work, as you can see. But I want to acknowledge a couple of things. One, it's actually, there's almost 10 million people now globally that have learned to read and write through the campaign. But the sacrifice that Charla and Lucy and now Felix, who's with us up at Tumalar Bogabilla, make to come out here to help us make this work is extraordinary. And they leave their family behind. They're total volunteers. They get paid nothing. And they come out here and work in very remote communities, very tough communities. When you think of the communities we're in now, Brewarrina, Walgett and Tumalar Bogabilo. These people make enormous sacrifices. They have children born while they're away. They have grandchildren born while they're away. Felix's son the other day broke his leg and he's all the way up at Bogabilla Tumalar. He can't go home. His son told him not to come home. He said, Dad, stay and do the work you're there to do. So people make enormous contributions to this. But what's important and is that every town we've been in, every town, when we leave, nobody is talking about what Literacy for Life Foundation did. Everybody's talking about what they did. That's when you know that's real community development, when people forget who you are, you know, because they take ownership and responsibility themselves. And that's what this does.
Extraordinary.
In Bogabilla, can I just say one more thing? While you're thinking of a question, you won't shut me up. On the 27th of May 1967, I was given the right to speak by referendum, and I haven't shut up since.
Good.
Yeah, but let me say this. This method, the least that's graduated is 44%, and next week up in Bogabilla, and it's pretty famous for being nothing being achieved there in a long, long time, they're going to graduate 90% of the students out of intake one.
All right, we've got time for one more question. Well, they have this one and then you up the back. If we could keep them... Yep.
Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the land where we meet today and pay my respect to elders past and present. My name's Jessica Yamaguchi and I'm a Gungalita and Wanyu woman from the Gulf of Carpentaria. I think that documentary was really insightful, really well done, and it's sending some really good messages out there about the importance of adult literacy. My question or comment, I guess, as well, was I picked up a few things from the film. Obviously, empowerment, community-driven, very important, but the coordinator talked a lot about having mentors and how that, you know, she acknowledged all the mentors at the end, and I think it's really important that throughout the documentary they also talked about supporting outside the classroom, inside the classroom, so it's not just about teaching literacy, but, you know, helping with when the tap water issue happened and that type of thing, so being a bit more holistic in that sense. And I also picked up, obviously, on the shame factor that we know what it's like for our mob. So I was wondering if there's any suggestions or insights from this around helping to support that shame factor in delivering programs and services. Yeah. You know, I think culturally appropriate, culturally safe, these are the terms that we hear, but it's good to hear in practice how it can be managed.
That's really important. One of the things we do to manage the shame factor, because that... I remember when we first talked about going to a community and people said, you know, Jack, what do you think? And I said, the biggest problem with this is going to be the shame for that mob. And what we've figured out already is that the fourth intake into a campaign is when the young men below 25 might come into it. And they won't come till you get to that fourth intake. That's because of all the machoism, the bravado, the, you know, I don't want to be part of that and all that sort of stuff. But when we first start the campaign, phase one is community socialisation and mobilisation. So we train local Aboriginal people to go around and survey every Aboriginal household. And part of the questionnaire is, are there people that have low literacy in your house? Do you think this is something you want in your community? So immediately we start to hand it over to them. Then we also go around to all the paper shop, the pharmacy, all the different agencies, and the supermarket, you know, the petrol station, and get everybody to become supporters of the campaign. So that wherever people go, people are saying, oh, have you joined the class? Because everyone knows who can't read and write. If you're a shopkeeper, you know. If you're a pharmacist, you know. So when everybody's encouraging people into the campaign, into the classes, They don't feel shame because they're seeing people valuing learning. Same as when we have the kids in there. You know, we won't get literate communities until we get communities that value learning. And the way to do that is to reduce low literacy levels to 20 or 10%. Once that's the tipping point. Once you get to there, you will have communities that value learning. And I love it when kids come into the classroom because they're actually seeing their parents valuing learning. And you're right, the byproduct, I think literacy actually ends up being the byproduct of all of this because there's so much other stuff that happens around it. I mean, people engage less with the criminal justice system, their health improves, children go to school more. You know, Narelle, for example, she was, she won't mind me telling you this because she told everyone herself, but she said she was going to jail for 5 years. And they let her stay in the campaign. And then when she went for sentencing and the police told her, you need to bring your suitcase with you because she'll be going for 5 years. And she stood up in court and spoke up for herself. And she said, I've turned my life around, you know. I'm now doing learner's lessons, learning to drive. She said, I've learned to read and write and I no longer behave violently. And that magistrate gave her a suspended sentence, you know. So what the students even say is, I learned to read and write, but what I really learned how to do was talk. You know, so you're dead right. There's all of that other stuff that needs to be captured as part of this, because while it's a literacy campaign, the reading and writing almost ends up a byproduct of all the other good stuff that actually happens.
Thank you, Jack. Yep. One more quick question.
Yeah, firstly, I'd like to acknowledge the land, the traditional owners of the land, and the brothers and sisters that are here today, and the non-Indigenous peoples, cultural from around the world. I'm a Gomeroi woman from Moree Way, and what I found when I was out that way at the age of 15, 16, when I was with Skillshare, I was actually doing going around to the communities. There's two community camps in Moree. There's a top camp in the Mission. And what I found going into the community was I was appointed the task. I was a trainee finishing Year 10. I wasn't sort of strong and brainy enough to do Year 11 and 12, but I continued on with the traineeship clerical in Moree. And my role was to go out to the communities in Moree within itself, and then I went to Bogabilla and Mungandai and various other communities in the Gamilaroi area, tribe, nation. And, yeah, you're right, Uncle Jack, it's about people power. It's in for us to engage and, you know, the white fellas to back us up with their, you know, experience, because we need to get out to our people and liaise more. Funding's the issue, yeah, but we need to make that first contact with communities, because I asked them, what do you want? You know, and some of them didn't even know how to read and write. That's my experience. But I just laid out sheets of paper and said, write down what you want. They were saying driver's licence. They were saying, I want to be a model. I want to do art. And so I got that up and going, and at the age of 14, 15 years of age, and I'm, what, 44 now, but when I go back to Moree, people say, we still got you and Dali going, sis. What about that time, you know? So I still get those feedbacks from when I was young, setting up those programs. And when I look at that, that just brought flashback to me and my experience in the Gamilaroi tribe. And I loved it. I'll do it again and again if I have to. But my next project is to do radio. So Art Sound has offered me a position there, which I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully I could do some training, and I'd have a someone to train me up again, and to get out and to Canberra and Queanbeyan, and hopefully get something happening out and to bring the people in to train them with the panels and journalism. And then I know I could talk a bit too, Jack. I'm a bit of a yarn, like a yarn. And but I had five kids to a Brew Warren, a man. He was a barker, a big family out that way. But we're separated, but we're still friends. And but he was illiterate, so he was shamewayful in that he was with me. He said, "How did I end up with you? You're so educated, and I'm dumb black fella." And I said, "No, it's all right. Just be, you know, just take it easy." So I started teaching him, and that's the thing with the kids that do go to school, they take it home to their families. And teach our elders, and they teach their aunties or uncles, or even their parents. So I still encourage young fellas out there to go to school, because you could take it back home to the mob, to the country, and that there. So,
and I think that's a beautiful note to end on. That's it. Couldn't be more perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think a big hand for Jack and his program.
Not for me, but I'm not there.